Welcome, and thank you for standing by, everyone. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During today's Q&A session, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Today's call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn today's meeting over to your host, Ms. Kathy Harbin. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Cedric, and thank you, everyone, for joining us today for an update on the investigation of pulmonary disease among people who use e-cigarettes. We're joined today by CDC's Ileana Arias. Dr. Arias is Senior Scientific Advisor and Acting Deputy Director for Non-Infectious Diseases at CDC. We're also joined by Dr. Dana Meany-Delman. She's the incident manager for the response to this outbreak. We also have representatives from states who will be talking about their work. Dr. Daniel Fox is with Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine with WakeMed Health and Hospitals in North Carolina. Dr. Jonathan Myman is Chief Medical Officer with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Dr. Jennifer Layden is Chief Medical Officer and State Epidemiologist with the Illinois Department of Public Health. Mitch Zeller is with us. He's Director of the Center for Tobacco Products at FDA. We'll also have other folks at CDC joining us for the Q&A session. They'll introduce themselves when they first begin speaking. I'll now turn the call over to Dr. Arias.
Thank you, Kathy, and thank you all for joining us today for this briefing. At CDC, we know and we share people's concerns about the severity of these illnesses associated with the use of e-cigarette products, which is also known as vaping. As you know, in addition to the death in Illinois already reported, we learned just this week of another death that occurred in July in Oregon and another in Indiana. In addition, we are aware of other deaths that are under investigation, one other death that's under investigation as a possible case. We're keeping the families and friends of all those affected by this illness in our thoughts, and CDC, FDA, and our state partners are working around the clock to find out what is making people sick. And we also appreciate your help in getting relevant information out to the public. And so, again, thank you for your service in that. We continue to learn more about these cases of lung disease associated with the use of e-cigarette products. While we don't have all the answers yet, we are getting clearer about things that we should be looking at to understand the situation. The focus of our investigation is narrowing, and that's great news, but we're still faced with complex questions in this outbreak that will take time to answer. Today, several publications are being released about what is known so far. These publications describe some of the cases that have been reported and include an interim outbreak case definition to help healthcare providers and state and local public health departments identify and report confirmed and probable cases as the investigation continues. Please know that we're working tirelessly and relentlessly following all leads and avenues to understand these illnesses and their cause and how they can be prevented. To give you an update of the status of the investigation, the steps that we have been taking, and where we're going in the future, I'd like to introduce Dr. Dana Meany-Delman, who is serving, as was mentioned, as the incident manager of CDC's response to this outbreak.
Thank you very much, Dr. Arias. I'm pleased to share an update on this multi-state investigation of illnesses associated with e-cigarette use. As we work to identify what is causing healthy young people to become ill, state health officials and doctors are finding clinical similarities between patients, and this will help doctors identify patients more quickly. And while the investigation is ongoing, CDC has advised that individuals consider not using e-cigarettes, because as of now, this is the primary means of preventing the severe lung disease. And of course, e-cigarette use is never safe for youth, young adults, or pregnant women. Several reports will be released today that describe lung illnesses associated with the use of e-cigarette products in over 60 patients in several states, including North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Utah. Patients reported similar symptoms, displayed similar clinical presentations and findings, and all reported e-cigarette products in the 90 days prior to developing symptoms, most within a week or so before symptoms developed. Many of these patients reported recent use of THC-containing products, and some reported using both THC and nicotine-containing products. A smaller group reported using only nicotine products. No specific e-cigarette devices or substances have been linked to all cases, and e-cigarettes include a variety of chemicals and additives, and consumers may not know what each product contains. Particularly for products obtained from social sources or off the street, it is difficult to know what is contained in the e-cigarette product. CDC, states, and other partners are actively investigated, but so far, no definitive causes have been established. Clinical information from the largest cohort of patients from Illinois and Wisconsin, combined with that of patients from other states, has helped define the clinical picture of what we are dealing with. As Drs. Layden and Myman mentioned in their article to be published in the New England Journal of Medicine today, these cases may be some of the most severe, and the full spectrum of illness may be broader. We are thankful to Drs. Layden and Dr. Myman for their important contributions to our knowledge base. At this time, more than 25 state health departments have reported possible cases of lung illness associated with the use of e-cigarette products, and additional states are investigating potential cases. More than 25 is actually 33 jurisdictions and one territory. As mentioned by Dr. Arias, three deaths have already been reported, and one death is under investigation, and we're hoping to have more information about these deaths later today. It is very important that other causes of lung illnesses, such as infection, be ruled out before any lung illness is considered a confirmed or a probable e-cigarette-associated case. And CDC has worked with Illinois and Wisconsin, as well as other states, to create a case definition to classify the cases in a consistent way. Once state investigators have examined the medical records of potential cases and contacted the clinical care team, they will have the information they need to determine if a case is a confirmed or a probable case. CDC has begun receiving these data from states and will update the actual number of cases next week on our website. We appreciate your patience as possible cases are carefully analyzed to ensure they meet the appropriate case definition. And we are aware of over 450 total possible cases, including the 215 already reported. Based on the clinical and laboratory evidence to date, we believe that a chemical exposure is likely associated with these illnesses. However, and I want to really stress this, more information is needed to determine which specific products or substances are involved. We are aware that some laboratories have identified vitamin E acetate in product samples, and we've connected those laboratories with the FDA forensic labs to compare results. At this time, no one device, product, or substance has been linked to all cases, and continued investigation is needed to better understand if a true relationship exists between any specific product or substance and the illnesses we are observing in patients. And to find the answer, we need to combine information about e-cigarette use, the product sample testing, and the clinical information from patients. CDC, FDA, states, clinicians, and other partners are hard at work investigating these cases, and the reports released today are a step forward to finding more answers. CDC has mobilized a multidisciplinary team of subject matter experts for this multi-state investigation, and at their invitation, CDC also deployed staff to Wisconsin and Illinois, the first states to report cases, and we're helping to assist with their state investigation. CDC is working extremely closely with the Food and Drug Administration to help facilitate e-cigarette product sample collection from those patients who are clinically ill. On August 30th, CDC published recommendations for the clinicians, public health officials, as well as for the public, and we published an interim outbreak case definition for state epidemiologists to use, and this is available in today's MMWR, soon to be released. CDC has also provided data collection tools and established a national database to collect data from any and all cases that meet this case definition. and we need as much data as possible to fully understand the extent of the problem and to identify the cause of these illnesses. CDC encourages clinicians to report possible cases of e-cigarette-associated lung illness to their local or state health department for further investigation. And if e-cigarette product use is suspected as a possible cause for a patient's pulmonary disease, a detailed history of the substances used, the source of the substances, and the devices should be obtained, and efforts should be made to determine if any remaining product, devices, or liquids are available for testing. CDC also encourages local and state health departments to notify CDC about cases as promptly as possible and to contact CDC for the most recent versions of the surveillance case definitions, our reporting guidelines, and our case investigation forms. Most importantly, while this investigation is ongoing, people should consider not using e-cigarette products. People who do use e-cigarette products should monitor themselves for symptoms such as cough, shortness of breath, chest pain, nausea, and vomiting, and promptly seek medical attention for any health concerns. Regardless of the ongoing investigation, people who use e-cigarette products should not buy these products off the street and should not modify e-cigarette products or add any substances that are not intended by the manufacturer. And again, e-cigarette products should never be used by youth, young adults, pregnant women, or by adults who do not currently use tobacco products. If you are concerned about your health or the health of a loved one who is using an e-cigarette product, contact your health care provider or call your local poison control center at 1-800-222-1222. Also submit detailed reports of any unexpected health or product issues relative to tobacco or e-cigarette products to the FDA through their online safety reporting portal. We also encourage the public to visit CDC's outbreak page, which is being updated at cdc.gov/e-cigarettes, and this will contain the most up-to-date information. Please know that CDC, FDA, state, and clinical partners are working hard to understand why people are getting sick. We will continue to share what we know and what we don't know with health departments, clinicians, and the public to respond to this outbreak. And after today's publications, I hope that others, like me, will be able to identify e-cigarette-associated pulmonary illnesses. Thank you very much.
We'll now go to Dr. Daniel Fox with WakeMed.
Good morning. Thank you all for having me, and thanks to all those who are on the call. So what we have seen here in North Carolina, we were anxious to report and discuss and make known to the public, and the CDC has been, as well as our state health department, has been instrumental in helping us kind of coordinate the message and get this to the place where it needs to be. What we wanted to report and kind of what we have seen has been a cluster of five cases that will be reported later today, and each of these cases featured a pulmonary illness in a relatively young person, ranging in age from 18 to 35, for what we saw here in North Carolina. The symptoms that these patients were experiencing were being short of breath, having some GI or gastrointestinal symptoms of nausea and vomiting, and fevers. Even though this frequently can show up as an infectious appearing illness, it ended up not being an infection. And as a result of the workup that was done and the history that was taken, one of the things that was found in common with all of these cases is that all patients were using vaped substances in e-cigarettes. They all had abnormal chest x-rays and developed a need for a lot of oxygen, and that varied across each patient, but a couple of them required intensive care status to be cared for. During the workup and the history, all of the patients that we saw had used or consumed THC through their vaped vaping devices through the e-cigarette, and that seemed to be a common feature. Some used smoked THC as well, and most used nicotine-containing products as well. All of our patients underwent evaluation, and after the clinical evaluation, we found a certain type of pneumonia that was non-infectious. It's called lipoid pneumonia, but basically can occur when either oils or lipid-containing substances enter the lungs. So we have been very thankful and are very appreciative to the CDC for helping us get this message out. I think take-home messages here for the public is that vaping cartridges, particularly those vaping cartridges that may not be that may have been purchased off the street or where the substances in them are not entirely clear, we do not believe are safe and pose a risk to our patients, particularly our young patients. For our providers, doctors and nurses need to inquire about vaping as a part of the history and to consider non-infectious pneumonias, in this case, lipoid pneumonia is what it's called, in cases of respiratory failure where this is a part of the history. And to continue to just try to spread the message about the rise, the rapid rise in vaping that is occurring, particularly in younger patient populations, as this is not being used as a way to get off of cigarette, say, or cigarettes or traditional tobacco products, but is an alternative way of delivering substances. So just trying to get the message out about that. And with that, I'll conclude my portion and pass the baton here to Dr. Myman.
Great, thanks. So I want to thank everyone for the opportunity to talk today about the joint investigation between Wisconsin and Illinois that's being detailed in the New England Journal of Medicine article that's being released today. And what I want to do is just give listeners a brief overview of how we came to recognize this cluster of illnesses and how we approached the investigation. And at that point, I'll hand it over to Dr. Layden to discuss some of the findings contained in our report. I do want to first thank some of the astute clinicians at the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin who first recognized this cluster of illnesses and brought it to the attention of public health. Of course, I also want to take colleagues here at the Wisconsin Department of Health Services, the Illinois Department of Health, and the CDC for their significant efforts to help investigate this cluster in order to prevent future cases. So this health concern first came to the attention of public health in Wisconsin on July 10th when we were contacted by the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin regarding five patients who were admitted over the previous 4 weeks with kind of progressive shortness of breath, fatigue, and some other symptoms. All of these patients had evidence of lung disease on chest imaging, and all of them had reported e-cigarette use of multiple products over the days, weeks, and in some cases months prior to the onset of their symptoms. Extensive workups that were performed in the hospital for infectious causes as well as some other possible causes such as autoimmune disease were negative. So over the next 2 weeks, we received several additional reports from the Children's Hospital. And so the Wisconsin Department of Health Services summarized what we knew, and we issued an alert to clinicians on the 25th of July. And at that point, we really didn't have an indication of the scale or the geographic extent of the cluster. But shortly after issuing that alert, we were contacted by a physician in Illinois treating a patient with a very similar clinical symptoms and also stating a history of e-cigarette use. So at that point, we notified the Illinois Department of Public Health, and we launched a joint investigation on August 1st. And soon thereafter, given the likelihood that this was a larger multi-state issue, the Wisconsin Department of Health Services issued an alert to other state health departments describing what we had observed. After that alert was put out, we started receiving numerous reports of similar illnesses from clinicians in Illinois and Wisconsin. So CDC was contacted at that point, who provided an epidemiologic assistance field team to both Illinois and Wisconsin on August 20th to help investigate the cases in both states. So early on in this investigation, both of our states, we developed a case definition to identify patients with pulmonary disease linked to e-cigarette use. And that definition was further refined over about a week with assistance from the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists and the CDC. And for any patients that met that case definition, we requested medical records, which were analyzed by a team of physicians using a standardized process to really kind of characterize the patient's symptoms, describe the laboratory and findings from imaging, get any history on reported drug exposures, describe the treatments they received in the hospital, and as well as the course of their illnesses and their medical outcomes. We also administered a standardized interview to patients who met the case definition to get more detailed information on the types of e-cigarettes products used in the 3 months before their symptoms began. So the Illinois Department of Health also conducted a retrospective review of their ED visits over the previous 18 months to identify any other cases of unexplained respiratory illnesses. And the goal was to try and determine if the cluster of cases that we were observing was indeed a true increase or due to increased awareness or recognition by medical providers. So this information was synthesized by Illinois and Wisconsin in coordination with CDC to provide a thorough description of the 53 patients from both states. So at that point, I'll hand it over to Dr. Layden to describe some of our summary findings.
Great. Thank you, Dr. Maiman. And I want to start off by thanking our numerous partners that have and continue to tirelessly work on this investigation, including the numerous colleagues at our state health agencies, local health departments and clinical partners, as well as investigators and colleagues at the CDC. Thank you, the leadership at IDPH, for the support for supporting these efforts. And I want to thank the continued partnerships with the Wisconsin Health Department, the CDC, and the FDA. As we review our findings and continue our investigation, I do want to recognize that these are not just cases or data points, but these individuals are individuals who are suffering from severe and serious illness, and we want to do what we can, everything we can, to assist with the larger investigation and prevent additional illnesses. Our report that's going to be published in the New England Journal of Medicine describes the clinical presentation of the first 53 cases reported in Illinois and Wisconsin. All cases meet the case definition, the working case definition that's published in the MMWR and the New England Journal. What we have found so far is that the majority of people who have become ill are generally healthy, are young with a median age of 19 years, and the majority have been men. Patients have had symptoms for days to weeks before their final admission to the hospital, with the median being about 6 days. At time of presentation, the majority of patients have had respiratory symptoms, with the most common being shortness of breath, constitutional symptoms such as fever and fatigue, sometimes weight loss, as well as GI symptoms. All patients have had abnormalities seen on lung imaging, apparent in both lungs. Infections have not been identified as the source of the underlying lung illnesses. Among our 53 patients, nearly all patients were hospitalized, 98%. And of note, in interest, 72% of the patients were seen as an outpatient prior to their final admission for symptoms. Among the patients that were hospitalized, over half of the patients required intensive care management, and 32% of the patients required mechanical ventilation to help their breathing. Among the patients in this case series, all reported using e-cigarette product use in the last 90 days. The majority reported using a THC-based product, and a majority also reported using a nicotine-based product. Patients did report a range of products and devices, and at this time, no one product has been associated with all the cases. It is important to note that exposure information is self-reported and is sometimes limited by a patient's recollection or ability and willingness to share information. So we do need to be cautious in our interpretation of the data and recognize that this is a preliminary report. Patients who do use e-cigarette products and have symptoms, they should seek medical care, and we ask clinicians to continue to report possible cases to public health authorities. This investigation is ongoing, and we want to thank all of the public health partners and clinical partners for their work and dedication and in efforts to ultimately identify what is causing these illnesses. We will continue to work with the CDC and continue to send samples to the FDA when collected. At this time, I would like to turn it over to Mitch Zeller with the FDA.
Thanks so much, Dr. Layden, and I want to thank all of FDA's colleagues at the CDC, Illinois, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and all of our public health partners for their tireless work as we work collaboratively on this ongoing investigation. And on behalf of FDA, our thoughts go out to the families of those individuals who have passed away of respiratory illnesses following the use of vaping products. FDA is working very closely with our partners at the state and federal level and as quickly as possible to gather more information about these cases, including information to help identify the products or the substances in these products that may be causing these illnesses. Here's where we are, and we are at a critical fact-gathering stage of this investigation. And as you've heard from all the speakers, more information is needed to better understand whether there's a relationship between any specific products and any specific substances in those products and the reported illnesses. We have been and we will continue to provide laboratory assistance to state public health officials by analyzing samples of products obtained by the states as part of their ongoing investigations. The number of samples that FDA has received continues to increase. We now have over 120 samples for testing. The FDA laboratory is analyzing these samples for the presence of a broad range of chemicals. This includes nicotine, THC, other cannabinoids, along with cutting agents or diluents, additives, pesticides, opioids, poisons, and toxins. In many cases, but not all, patients have acknowledged recent use of THC-containing products, and some have reported the use of e-cigarettes containing nicotine. Some have reported that they used both types of products. The samples we're continuing to evaluate show a mix of results, and no one substance or compound, including vitamin E acetate, has been identified in all of the samples tested. It's important to emphasize that identifying any compounds that are present in the samples will ultimately just turn out to be one piece of the puzzle, but will not necessarily answer questions about causality, and it makes all of our ongoing work that much more critical. The results from the FDA laboratory analysis will be shared with the respective states to aid in their investigations, and it will help further inform the federal response. We absolutely understand the interest in the specifics of all of these ongoing investigations, and we're committed to providing updates to the public while still maintaining the integrity of these ongoing investigations. FDA encourages the public to submit detailed reports of any unexpected tobacco or e-cigarette-related health or product issues to FDA via our online safety reporting portal. And we hope that all the media on this call will provide the URL in your reporting, and that is www.safetyreporting, all one word, .hhs.gov. Just one closing thought, and that is that FDA is going to leave no stone unturned in following any potential leads regarding any particular constituent or compound that may be at issue, and we're committed to taking appropriate actions as the facts emerge. Thank you.
Thank you. All of our speakers, before we go to the Q&A, I want to just let people know that the MMWR and the MMWRs and a CDC press release are on their way out if they are not already out. All of the materials and the remarks on our telebriefing today are embargoed until 1 p.m. Eastern time today. And we do ask you, as you always do and have, to respect that embargo. And again, we will have a transcript posted later this afternoon. So now we will start our Q&A. Cedric, can you take it away?
Sure. As a quick reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then one. Remember to unmute your phone and record your name and media affiliation when prompted. If you'd like to withdraw your question, you may press star 2. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star then 1. First question comes from Mike Stobe with the Associated Press. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First, I just wanted to make sure I heard correctly the update of cases. Did you say 450 in 33 states, or did you say 32 states in a territory? We'd love to see that list and where they are, and also when the first cases had onset of symptoms. And then the second question was, I know that you all have said that some cases had only vape nicotine, but is this all self-report? Was there been some biological testing or lab testing that confirmed that they had only vape nicotine, or is it possible they vape THC but just didn't admit it? Thank you.
Thanks for that question. So just to clarify, there are 33 states and one jurisdiction, and those will be listed on our website by around 1 p.m. today. I think your other question had to do with onset of symptoms, but just to clarify the other number, as of right now, we know about 450 total possible cases, meaning some of these are still under investigation by states. But 450 that we are aware are currently being investigated. And as I mentioned in my remarks earlier, this is pretty complicated because it requires exclusion of other illnesses, and it requires medical record review. So you'll see that in the case definition, the MMWR. But that's why it takes so long to determine whether these are true cases. I think maybe I'll turn it to Jen and to John to see if they could answer the onset of symptoms, the earliest onset, since you had some of the earliest cases.
Sure. Hi, this is Jen Layden from Illinois Department of Public Health. Our case series, our initial case occurred in mid-April and through August.
Okay. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lena Sun with the Washington Post. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. I have a couple of questions I wanted to clarify. What is the total number of deaths either been reported or under investigation? And then my second question had to do with lipoid pneumonia, but maybe you could just answer that first one.
Absolutely. So we are aware of 3 confirmed deaths and 1 death under investigation.
Total, right? That's just including the Illinois case that's already been reported, right?
Yes, that's total.
Okay, total and 1 under investigation. I was wondering if you could comment on the marker of lipid-laden macrophages seems to be an indication of this disease, lipoid pneumonia, but not all of the patients in the Wisconsin and Illinois series seem to have had bronchoscopies. Is that something that clinicians should be considering, even though I know it's an invasive procedure, but it does provide some clinical evidence, and since lipoid pneumonia is pretty rare, especially in young people, whether that would be a marker of this disease?
So this is Dan Fox from North Carolina, down at Wake Med. So all of our cases that we performed bronchoscopy on did have findings of the lipid-laden macrophages and stained that fluid positive for lipid-containing substances, which is how we arrived at that diagnosis in combination with some fairly characteristic imaging. It is a rare diagnosis. We probably under-recognize it across all populations, but I think if there's clinical uncertainty, that could be of some value to clinicians, who are struggling to make a diagnosis. And I'll let other folks chime in as well. Thank you.
Thanks so much. This is Dana Meany-Dellman at CDC. I just wanted to mention, I don't think we yet know the clinical significance of the lipid-laden macrophages, and we also don't know if the lipids that have been detected within these cells are endogenous or exogenous, meaning do they come in through the body or do they represent lipids that are already within the lung tissue. In terms of bronchoscopy and the invasive procedure, I think that's an individual decision that really depends on the clinical condition of the patients. And I think it's too early to know whether those lipid-laden macrophages are going to be the clue to these diseases, since we have a range of pathologic illnesses.
Thank you.
Okay. Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Allison Aubrey with NPR. Your line is open.
Oh, hi. So an editorial being published alongside today points out that, you know, it seems that a lot of these young adults are mixing multiple ingredients. As you pointed out, many are using THC and nicotine at the same time. And he's sort of making the point, like, when you mix ingredients and then you have potential contaminants, you may even create new agents that may be toxic. If it turns out you can't pin this to a single compound or additive, or how do you begin, where do you go from there? Is it possible that each of these cases kind of just reflects the new habits that young vapers have of vaping multiple things, a lot of it sort of black market?
So this is Dana Meany-Dumb, and I'll start. Maybe our FDA colleagues can join in as well. I mean, I think that's why our recommendations right now are recommending, at least until we continue the investigation, of more information to avoid use of e-cigarettes, but emphasizing that things should not be added and things should not be mixed. We're hoping that we do, in fact, determine what this might be, but that's I think, too premature at this point. I'm going to turn to our FDA colleagues and see if they have any comments.
I would just completely echo what was just said. If you're with these increasing reports, if you're thinking of purchasing one of these products off the street, out of the back of a car, out of a trunk, in an alley, or if you're going to then go home and make modifications to the product yourself using something that you purchased from some third party or got from a friend, think twice.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Now, next question comes from Helen Branswell with Shaft. Your line is open.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my question. I'm wondering how you make sense of the fact that this seems to be happening now and seems to be new. Am I correct in assuming that you actually think this is a new phenomenon as opposed to something that had been unrecognized before? And related to that, I reached out to the European CDC and to an organization in Europe called the European Monitoring Centers for Drugs and Drug Addiction. They're not reporting any cases there, and I'm wondering how you make sense of the fact that this seems at this point to be a U.S. phenomenon.
So I'd love for Dr. Layden and Dr. Myman to comment as well, because I think we're all wondering whether this is new or just newly recognized. Until we really have more information from our state partners looking backwards in time to see if some of these cases have been discovered, it's hard to know with certainty, but they've done some drumming surveillance work that might be helpful. I don't know if you want to comment.
Sure. Thanks, Dana. This is Jen Layden from Illinois Department of Public Health. And again, I echo that I think the findings at this point are preliminary, and I don't think we can say definitively if it's a new or newly recognized phenomena. What we have done here in Illinois is use something called syndromic surveillance, which is a way to monitor for ED or emergency room department visits for certain potential public health threats or conditions. We looked for severe respiratory illness among the age, kind of an age range similar to what we're seeing, and looked at 2018 and 2019. What it appears at this time, although again I would caution that this is preliminary, is that there does appear to be an increase of cases starting May, June of 2019 that is higher than it was in 2018. So it would suggest that it's a new phenomena.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Ann Thompson with NBC News. Your line is open.
Thank you. And to follow up on that, I think that's the question we're asking here is, I mean, what's driving this increase? Is it faulty products? Is it more users? Is it doctor awareness? What's behind these growing numbers? Thank you.
And we completely agree that those are the questions we're asking as well. We'd really like to get to the bottom of what is causing these illnesses. I just think it's premature to know at this point. That's why we're working tirelessly around the clock.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kate Thayer with the Chicago Tribune. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you. Can you tell us anything more about the death, ages, where that additional death under investigation is, and what they were vaping?
So thanks. We have seen and spoken with our colleagues in Indiana who are have put out a press release with regard to the information they're willing to share. So I think you can find that information online. I can't really speak yet to the additional death under investigation, as we really don't know if this is related or not.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Brian Furlow with Lancet Respiratory Medicine. Your line is open. Brian, your line is open. You may be on mute.
Hi, can you hear me now?
We can. Thank you.
Thank you. Has the absence of an ICD-10 code for vaping devices complicated syndromic surveillance and case reporting, and will an ICD-10 code for these cases or for vaping devices generally be forthcoming?
So, Jen or John, I know that you've used some of these codes for your syndromic surveillance. Do you want to comment on that?
I think on the more general question, it's hard to comment on the impact of the ICD codes related to vaping specifically. In regards to our investigation, we looking back in time, we chose not to use terms of vaping because we thought with the increased awareness there may be more reporting of the use of vaping in a recent month. So we really focused more on the clinical presentation. But on a larger scale, certainly, the more specific queries we can have to vaping, I think will help us to understand potential not only pulmonary illnesses, but other potential adverse events.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Nikki Keene with Pharmacy Practice News. Your line is open.
Thank you. Can you talk a little bit about the clinical course of the patients once they're hospitalized? What are the treatments are being used, and how long are they on ventilation?
So I don't know if our colleagues Jen or John or others want to comment on that. I think you have the largest cohort of patients, so you probably have the best information.
I'm neither Jen or John. I'm Dan Fox. Wait, Matt, our cohort is smaller. I don't know if they were going to chime in or not. But I can talk briefly about that while they're hopefully going to chime in as well. When the clinical course tends to be as they describe, there's a prodrome of several days where folks are not feeling well. Typically are often misdiagnosed as having either bronchitis or a viral illness before they present to the hospital for a higher level of care. The way that we evaluated our patients is we would either be called from the emergency department or from the floors, and then as the pulmonary consult team or the intensive care team, we would recognize the syndrome. When patients required intensive level care and mechanical ventilation or respiratory support, they were typically on the ventilator between 2 and 7 days. The treatments are not known for how to treat this. All of our patients received some antibiotics, although ultimately infection was felt not to be the cause. And all of our patients also received some type of steroid, either prednisone or methylprednisone, as a treatment, though at this point we don't know if that's helpful or not.
Yeah, this is John Myman. We have a larger case series, but I would say that's kind of what was just described is broadly consistent. About a third of the patients needed mechanical ventilation, you know, assistance of a breathing machine. The remainder needed some other support, whether that's supplemental oxygen. And, you know, over half of the 53 patients were admitted to the intensive care unit. As far as treatments were received, the vast majority did get antibiotics at some point, either, you know, during the hospitalization, sometimes before hospitalization, and the vast majority also received steroids. But as was just pointed out, although clinical improvement was observed on steroids, we can't say with certainty, you know, that this was an effective treatment in this case.
Okay. Next question, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just said thank you. So no other medications were given, and did the patients then go home without any signs of the infection of the pneumonia?
I'm sorry, you dropped that at the end there. Can you repeat the last part of your question?
Yeah, there was no clinical signs of damage to the lungs, permanent damage.
You know, our case series really focused on the presentation in the hospital. The question about long-term findings is something that's going to have to require additional investigation, whether there are any long-term effects. As far as what patients received when they went home, you know, a lot of the ones who were started on steroids continued to receive them as an outpatient after discharge.
Thank you. We have...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, we have time for two more questions if there are questions in the queue.
Okay. Our next question comes from Jane O'Donnell with USA Today. Jane, your line is open.
Hi. Excuse me. I wanted to I'll say the three in a row quickly. The 53, how are you describing them? Are they the ones you looked most closely at? I missed that part. You said the majority of those 53 do also involve THC in addition to nicotine, often in addition to nicotine, and then all five cases in North Carolina also involve THC. But it isn't clear that the 450, it's many of those involve THC. It's not most.
So I think these are the types of information that we're looking to collect. We have preliminary information, but it's really coming in as we speak, so we haven't been able to analyze yet the specific exposures. As I mentioned, this requires interview with the patients, and that can take some time. So at this point, we don't have the specifics around that that number of 450.
But the 53 are could you just explain again, those are – what are those exactly? I know they're in the report today.
Hi, this is Jen from Illinois Department of Public Health. These are 53 cases that have been reported to Illinois or Wisconsin that meet the current case definition, so are a probable or confirmed case. It takes extensive review of medical records and other information to identify someone that is a probable or confirmed case, and these 53 are of the first cases that have met the classification.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you. Last question.
Yes, our last question comes from Angelica Levito with CNBC. Your line is open.
Hello. Thank you for taking my question. I just wanted to ask about the terminology that you would suggest using in our reporting. You're saying that a lot of these cases have THC and nicotine, some one or the other, but you're telling people not to use e-cigarettes. Would you recommend using vaping more broadly, or how can we communicate this accurately to consumers?
So our perspective at this moment is until we have a cause and while this investigation is ongoing, that we're recommending individuals consider not using e-cigarettes. And that broad recommendation is because we do have a diversity of products, as you heard, some containing THC and some containing nicotine. As more information comes about and we nail down the specific e-cigarette products, we intend to revise that.
Okay, and then really quick, I know you'd already answered this, but I just want to be crystal clear on that 215 and 450. Is it 215 cases and 450 additional, or is it total?
450 is the total cases, that are being evaluated under investigation. The 215 of what is what was formally reported to CDC. So 450 includes the 215.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. And I want to thank our speakers, all of our speakers, very much for joining us today and giving their respective perspectives. We'll be able to respond to follow-up questions from media if you call us at 404-639-3286 or email us at media@cdc.gov. Thank you again to everyone for joining us, and this concludes our call.
Thank you. That concludes today's conference. You may all disconnect at this time.